Hello and welcome to the 18th episode of AD Game Club, the monthly video game club podcast where we choose a game from the past to play and talk about in depth. I'm your host, Andrew, and joining me today is my best friend and co-host, David.
Yes, at least until someone jumps out at me, knocks me out, and I have to go through an extended torture sequence.
It could totally happen at any time. At this top of the show here, I would like to mention that AD Game Club has a Facebook page. You can find it at facebook.com/ADGameClub. There you can keep up to date with us throughout the month and participate in the conversation by leaving comments. Anything else to bring up before we get to our game, David?
No, I may have some political thoughts as we talk about this one, so I guess there's fair warning for that, but that's, you know, part of the game, so
yes,
we can just get into it.
That game is Wolfenstein The New Order, released 2014 by Machine Games and Bethesda. And we kind of decided to play it because the new Colossus was out and there were just a lot of people talking about Wolfenstein. And we were like, hey, how about we talk about that Wolfenstein that came out way before this new one?
Yep.
We usually start out with our familiarity, and as far as the New Order goes, I can explicitly remember back in 2014 listening to podcasts where they were talking about both this game and Transistor, and the fact that I have now played both of them makes me really happy.
Cool.
And a realization that someday I will just relate everything to what podcast I was listening to at the time.
Yep. I definitely feel like that a lot already.
Yeah. I've been listening to podcasts for a really long time, I realize.
I don't think I have been listening to them as long as you, or at least not as frequently as I do now. I don't think I listened to any gaming podcasts, at the very least, when this came out, but it's one of those games that I heard it was good when it released, but it didn't really catch my interest. But the fact that people have kept talking about it for years and years and gotten excited about the sequel and how the sequel will carry on the themes of this game made me really interested to actually try it.
Yeah, I remember at the time everyone really praising the old school style of health packs and armor on top of the just over the top Nazi killing, which that definitely changed in tone when the second game came out this year and suddenly Nazis were a real thing again.
Yeah. So, speaking of other Wolfenstein games, I know that I actually thought it was the original, but I double-checked, and Wolfenstein 3D is the third game because there were a few. That was also like a reinterpretation of older 2D games, but Wolfenstein 3D is like the great granddaddy of all first-person shooters, but I've never actually played it or any of the other Wolfenstein games before this one.
I have also not actually played any of the other Wolfenstein games, but the 2009 game from Raven Software has been on my list for a very long time, and that's almost entirely because I really loved Singularity. And at the time, a lot of people were saying, hey, this studio is really good. You should check out their other games. And Wolfenstein was the other game. Mm-hmm. And just in general, I know from like reading like descriptions, whatever you would call it, that this is a soft sequel slash reboot of the 2009 game. So like, we'll get into it. But when the bad guy, Death's Head, is referencing his like previous encounters, that's because he was the bad guy of the 2009 game.
Neat.
Anything else? Or we can just jump past the spoiler and start talking about the plot of the game.
There was one interesting fact that I found out when I was looking up the very early history of the series was that the first two Wolfenstein games before the sort of invention of the first-person shooter were actually stealth games where you had to sneak around a castle full of Nazis to steal their plans. So that's kind of interesting with what both of us want to talk about with this game.
I found out kind of similarly that our main character, William B.J. Blazkowicz, is the main character of all of the Wolfenstein games, and I had no idea that was true. I thought he was a new character for this series, but for this trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I read in the quick little description of him that, oh yeah, he's the main character of all of the Wolfenstein games. They just gave him an actual story in this one, and that's why he seemed like a new character. Also, I've always been told that Wolfenstein 3D wasn't actually 3D because the computers couldn't actually render 3D at that time, which I thought that was a kind of cool little thing.
Well,
that
it was if you think a
perspective
about it,
trick.
If you think about it, all rendering of 3D objects is really a trick to make you think it's 3D.
Fair. Anyways, so spoiler warning, we're going to spoil everything about this game now. And then some probably. So, Wolfenstein, The New Order, and probably all of them, but at least this game takes place in an alternative history where the Nazis have, been able to win World War II due to, superior technology, that... we'll learn more about later, but they have like giant robots and crazy powerful robotic cannons and just it's awesome. But this game starts out with William B.J. Blazkowicz along with Fergus and Wyatt, two fellow American soldiers, on their way to storm the fortress of their nemesis, General William Death's Head Strauss. The three of them are captured and brought in to be experimented on, and this is one of the first choices of the game that I did not expect, mm-hmm. but Death's Head actually forces you to choose between Fergus and Wyatt as to which one he would then experiment on. And whoever you choose then creates a new timeline, which I guess adds to the replayability of the game. Which one did you go with? I saved Fergus, mostly by accident, but...
I saved Fergus because he was clearly, clearly he and Blazkowicz had a history, so...
They definitely did.
I wanted to, you know, like, obviously, didn't want... the younger kid to die, but between the two of them, I wanted to save BJ's friend.
My first attempt was to just not choose, but he just kills everyone if you try to do that.
Oh, I waited a little bit to see if anything would happen, but not long enough for that, apparently.
I waited, and then I restarted the checkpoint, and I had to choose. But anyway, so... Yeah, we both went with the Fergus timeline, and it officially tells you that that's the timeline you get, and I thought that was kind of cool. Eventually, I might go back. Probably not. I don't know. We'll get to that. So, you choose the survivor, and then you're left to basically be incinerated, but you're able to escape. But during the escape, BJ suffers a critical head injury due to some shrapnel from an explosion. He is brought to an asylum in Poland, and he remains there in a vegetative state for 14 years, being cared for by Anya and other staff there. Now, time traveling forward, sort of a montage up to 1960, 14 years later... the Nazis are ordering the asylum to be shut down and start killing all of the patients, including Anya's family, because they start to resist because, hey, this is cruel and unusual behavior. During which, this is when BJ awakens and is just, after 14 years of being a vegetable, is able to just kill everyone, like an entire army of Nazis. And I would say this is the most unbelievable moment in the entire game, but there are several.
Yeah, he really goes from not able to move at all to killing 20 Nazis very quickly.
very, very quickly. Like, he staggers a little bit there, and I think his vision is a little fuzzy, but, you know, there's Nazis to be killed, so that's what he's going to do. eventually, BJ and Anya escape and go to her grandparents' farm, where they find out he's basically filled in on what happened during the 14 years. Specifically 2 years into his coma is when the United States officially surrendered to the Nazis. So it's been 12 years of Nazis having basically won World War II and being the new de facto rulers. Blazkowicz interrogates a captured officer from the asylum, learns where the resistance members are being held, and he goes off to save his friends, Fergus, which was awfully convenient, that he just so happened to be right there waiting for him in Berlin. Skipping forward a little bit, once you save Fergus, he takes you to the proper resistance group, led by Caroline Becker, who I guess is another character from the series that if we had played, we'd know more about. What else? She's paralyzed. Not really a big thing, but that seems to be a common, like, if you're a previous game, you're going to get injured at some point in this game, right?
Right, and it's one of those things that, you know, a lot of the people, obviously she was an Allied fighter, but I think they also had a lot of intentional, you know, the fact that the Nazis were very quick to, you know, get rid of anyone that's physically or mentally disabled. And it tied into that theme.
It definitely did. With Max, I think it was.
Max Sauce.
Yes, he was a pretty good character overall. I like that. At this point, the Resistance just starts sending BJ onto several missions that were obviously way too dangerous for anyone to ever actually pull off, but BJ just pulls them all off, and he's able to steal secret documents and stealth helicopters from the Nazi research facility in London. At this point, they figure out that the reason Nazis got all this technology is because of some sort of ancient organization. Known as, and I'm probably going to butcher this, do you want to try pronouncing this, David?
Well, I think most of them said the Dat Yahut, although the actual member they found called it the Das Yahut, so I'm not totally sure what the correct pronunciation is.
So yeah, they figure out that there's this ancient organization, and that's where all the technology came from, and they figure out, hey, we know that the Nazis have one of these organization members in a jail, and you go break him out, running into some Nazis that you actually, played a game with while trying not to be discovered on a train, right, much earlier in the game. That's definitely one thing I liked about this game, and I'll get into, is just it is not afraid with taking breaks and just letting story happen, and I really like that. I'll bring up more examples of that later. Anyways, you save this member. His name is Set Roth, and he is able to then bring you to one of these caches of technology that you then are able to utilize to get a flight to the moon so that you can get the nuclear decryption codes so that you can then use nuclear missiles that you get from a U-boat that, again, BJ is able to commandeer. And then you use that U-boat and the nuclear missiles to, and also the organization's secret stash of super technology, to mount another attack on Death's Head's, his workshop base, his castle. And,
Stronghold.
Stronghold, sure. And there's this whole thing with Death's Head. You finally reach him. You find out that whoever you chose to die or be experimented on earlier, he still has the brain of that person, and he puts that brain into a robot, and that's sort of the final fight build-up before you actually fight Death's Head, who is also in a giant robot. And all of this is actually kind of fun. But eventually you kill off Death's Head. You're giving him a couple of like stabs to the chest, and then he pulls out a live grenade and it explodes right there in your face. And that is when the credits begin, is you, BJ, on the ground dying and saying to the Resistance to fire off the nukes, and while reciting the New Colossus poem, which I have a feeling might be relevant to the next game.
You mean but... Wolfenstein the New Colossus?
Yes.
Possibly.
Anyways, that's pretty much the summary of the game, right? Anything you feel I missed or you want to expand on, David?
No, I can talk about the specific parts I'm interested in more detail, but that's the important, you know, plot overview and important characters.
There really wasn't anything in the story itself that I felt like I had to either praise or critique. I think again, the story moments between those suicide missions are really great, and the ability to walk around and see the newspaper clippings and stuff like that to fill in mm-hmm. the history of basically everything from what happened in 1946 forward to what's going on in between the missions. They'll have little newspaper clippings of, hey, this research base was just attacked, and you can sort of see the Nazi spin on it. And I thought all of that storytelling was pretty good. It was surprisingly good for what I would have expected from a first-person shooter like this. But
yeah. So, I guess I didn't want to talk about one specific part so much as, like, how I felt about the story, which is, as I said, I'm going to get a little political, which is that it's kind of a weird feeling in this day and age to, where there are, you know, actual Nazi groups and, you know, white supremacist groups with very Nazi-like beliefs that are, you know, out there demonstrating and playing a game that is, you know, came out years ago with the premise of, hey, what if you were in a coma for 14 years and when you woke up, Nazis controlled the world? That's even more uncomfortable now than it was then, especially as I am... I'm not very religious, but I'm a Jewish person and was raised Jewish. So, I never like it. It's just been weird in general, sort of going from not facing any real, discrimination or hate to, this kind of, you know, seeing that on the news. And then, so I don't know. It's not like this is a good thing in the story or this is a bad thing in the story. It's complicated feelings I had while playing it.
Yes, most definitely. I put it down as a one of the things that I didn't really like about this game, and I don't mind if we go a little bit out of order on mm-hmm. this. But this is a very dark and violent game, and one of the things that I constantly had felt was that, yes, it's obviously asking you to have fun while playing this game, but at the same time, it's asking you to go to places or to think about things that are not pleasant. Mm-hmm. And it's a weird sort of, like, two things at the same time that, yes, it's a fun game, but I don't, like, it's not a fun game to be in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I mean, most of the horrible things are, of course, in the depiction of the Nazis and, like, there's the sort of over the top evil of like Death's Head and his weird experiments, and torturing people, and then there's like the sort of banal evil of, which I guess was depicted really well, of like conversations you can hear, you know, when you're going through the sewer and you hear a conversation of some lady on the street just like walking up to a soldier and being like, "Hi, I want to report a neighbor for, you know, for deviant activity. I saw him through a window putting on makeup." And it's like, oh yeah, this is terrifying. But then there's like over the top violence that that Blazkowicz does in a lot of points in the story, like when you first wake up and are torturing the captured officer, that it really feels like, you know, that sort of like, oh, video games have sometimes a cartoonish over fascination with graphic violence, or at least implied horrible violence, but it's okay. Yes. Because they're Nazis. It's fine. You don't have to feel bad about this at all.
I mean, that, again, you were referencing how Wolfenstein was one of the earliest first-person shooters, right?
Yeah.
Well, kind of. But, like, and it, that sort of theme carried through for almost all of the first-person shooters that followed, is, like, you're either fighting aliens or you're fighting Nazis because it's World War II.
Right.
And it's always been sort of a video game trope that Nazis are the only human villains that it's always okay to murder en masse because they're so universally hated regarded as evil.
Mm-hmm.
And this game definitely shows many moments of how, yes, Nazis were truly evil and that you're justified in that. And you're definitely painted as the good guy. Definitely better than like in a Uncharted game where you're killing just as many people just because you want to go on a treasure hunt.
Right.
But yeah, it definitely, it's tough. But there are, I don't know, there are definitely some moments that I do want to say that I liked about this game. The first I would like to bring up is I really like the weapon. The special weapon of this game is it starts out as a laser pistol, and then it eventually becomes a laser cannon.
Yes, it was a little funny that like your first encounter with it is you're just sneaking through a random like warehouse or garage and you find this prototype laser cutter and it's like, oh, this is convenient.
Yeah, now I can get through these little chain fences that are very clearly marked as compatible with this weapon. And then when you get the laser cannon, now it becomes an actual weapon that you can use against enemies, as well as cutting through actual, like, steel, I wouldn't call them doors, but plates?
Plates.
How about plates?
Grates.
Yeah. But yeah, it's one of those weapons that, as you're going through the game, you're constantly finding more modifications for it. Like, eventually I found a scope for it that allowed it to target enemies and their vitals. And then it would fire off basically the entire battery. But it allowed me in one shot to kill off these, like, huge mechs. Well, not the huge ones, but, like, the medium/large mechs I could then take out in one shot of this laser cannon. And I absolutely loved stuff like that. It was a lot of fun. It really reminded me of Half-Life 2, of just, like, you get this, whatever you call it. It was like a magnet gun? I can't remember
Gravity
what
gun.
They called it. Gravity gun. And then, like, the final chapter, they power it up so that it's, like, this super weapon. And I really enjoy the fact that there's this unique weapon that gets more powerful as you go. And by the end of the game, it's like, well, I could use this standard rifle, or I could use this laser cannon that just is super awesome.
See, I actually ended up, I really liked it, but I didn't end up using it as much as other weapons, partly because that targeting upgrade makes it so that you can't, I felt like it made it less useful because I couldn't just zoom in and headshot people from a distance. The only option was to fire the entire battery's worth at one person and then go find some place to recharge it. But I definitely enjoyed the fact that you could use it, you know, open up some utility of finding hidden ways around by cutting through certain walls, and that was also just a useful weapon in some situations, like a lot of the robot or power armor enemies were just weak to that because it was an energy weapon, and that made it a useful distinction from everything else.
Yeah, lasers and explosions are good against the metal enemies.
Yep, that's what the loading screen kept telling me.
The loading screen also kept telling me that Enigma codes will unlock additional gameplay modes, but I have no idea what that means because I could not find enough Enigma codes to unlock anything.
After I finished the game, I did go back and find a couple more until I could finish one of the codes. So,
what did you unlock?
I unlocked a mode that is just hard mode, but with no UI, so you don't know how much health and ammo you have.
Oh, okay.
And I think the others were things like that.
Fair.
So one thing that I really liked was the sort of combination of the action areas and stealth areas, because I play a lot of stealth games and immersive sim games like Dishonored, which I always play them as stealth, but I thought Wolfenstein had a really good mix of places where you didn't have to, but it was much better to approach it with stealth, because if you didn't take out the commanders, you would have a bunch of reinforcements until you took out the commander, and if you took them out silently, you would actually get collectibles put on your map. And it was a good mix of those, and then areas where stealth was not an option, and you had to know how to move from cover to cover and, isolate enemies and take them out so that you didn't get totally overwhelmed.
Yeah, for this game, I really felt like they found a fantastic balance between the stealth and the action, because BJ is a powerhouse of a first-person shooter protagonist. And he is able to take on a full wave of enemies at once, but if you become surrounded, you'll die very quickly, especially since you don't, like, really... You kind of regen a little bit of health, but you don't regen all the way up like we're more commonly used to in first-person shooters. So if you're getting hurt, you're going to get hurt, and you're not going to be able to take that many more shots. So I felt like the sneaking aspect of this game really came through as far as the commanders, in that all I had to really focus on is, okay, I'm going to sneak at least enough where I can take out these commanders. And then after that, if I get caught, it's no really big problem. I'll be able to just wipe out the rest of them, having fun with the shotguns or the heavier weaponry. And there was no downside. Like, there's no penalty of, you've killed people, now you can't get the ghost run or whatever. Like, I didn't have that aspect leaning over me the entire time. So I could have fun when I was spotted, and I wasn't powerless like in a Metal Gear Solid game where you get spotted and you're probably going to die before you can kill them because you're just weak when it comes to actual combat.
There were multiple times where I snuck through a room, went for the commander first, because one of the early perks that you can get is to just put the commanders on your map. Unlike other enemies. So I'd take out the commander and then sneak around throwing knives or using the silenced pistol on all the other soldiers. And then I'd sort of get up, dust off my hands, and start walking around, and then some soldier I missed would start shooting at me. And like you were saying, it doesn't penalize you after that point for just having a regular firefight. So I could just say, okay, well, I'll just, you know, break out the big guns for a moment, and I don't have to restart the whole level because of that.
Yeah, exactly. And I felt like that kept the game fun for me, whereas I have definitely felt moments of just pure frustration in games like Dishonored, because, damn it, this didn't go the way I wanted it to.
I did feel a little bit of at least in the beginning before I got more used to how to stealth good in this game. I missed being able to make a quick save every 5 seconds in case I messed up, but I did get used to
it. I felt like the checkpoints were often enough that I never really had a problem.
Well, it's more when I'm playing stealth games. I mean, it's the checkpoints are basically at the beginning of any given room or any area where you walk in and it will tell you how many commanders there are. That, you know, there will be one checkpoint before that and one checkpoint after. I'm just used to these immersive sim games where I can, like, take 2 steps, knock someone out, quick save, take another 2 steps, see where someone else is, and then reload so that they don't see me.
One thing I do want to point out is that I think the characters are very well done in this game. I really enjoyed spending time, like, not researching them, but, like, oh man, I'm blanking on her name, but I have it up here. Tekla.
Yeah.
Tekla really surprised me, and one of the things that is, I believe, an optional thing is that during your, like, at-home story moments, mm-hmm. Where you're just basically doing errands for Anya or someone else, but you can go to your bed and take a nap, and an additional sort of, like, story sequence will start because of that. And one of them was of Tekla, where she actually has a full-on conversation with you, which every other time you're sort of, like, just passing by, she'll say 1 line or 2 lines or something like that. But this was a full conversation between the two of you, and then you actually help her, like, train with how to firing pistols, and it was really good moment, in my opinion. Did you happen to see this cutscene sort of thing?
Yeah, I actually, I almost missed the first opportunity to take a nap just because every time you're in the base, someone is like, okay, can you hand me this thing? And I was like, you know, it would be really rude to just go sleep right now. But then I searched everywhere looking for a health upgrade and couldn't find it. So I looked up the location, and that's how you get upgrades while you're in the base, is you just go sleep. So once I got into that habit, I think you do that 1 or 2 times where you just get a very short close eyes, open eyes, and there's something on your bedstand. So it was a pleasant surprise when you go to bed and then this genius unable to relate to people normally lady, like, wakes you up in the middle of the night to ask you if your soul goes anywhere while you're asleep or dead.
Yeah, because she's terrified of sleeping. I thought that was really well done. I really liked moments like that.
Mm-hmm. Did you know that she is actually only in the Fergus timeline? You get a different character.
That's what I read as well.
Yeah.
I didn't read anywhere of who the other character is, if there was another character, but...
So, Tekla is basically your alternate timeline version of Nikola Tesla.
Yes.
The other character is your alternate timeline version of Jimi Hendrix.
Really?
He's just a guy who plays guitar and does recreational drugs to play guitar better. And I assume he also has some conversation where he wakes you up in the middle of the night to do drugs and play guitar, because those are the only pieces of information I found looking for what the character was like.
Which do you think is the true timeline?
I feel like...
We haven't actually experienced both timelines, yeah. But...
Well, I don't know if there is one or the other that's canon for the new Colossus, or if it follows both, but I feel like the one with the more pathos is where you, save the young cadet, and then you meet him later when he's grown up considerably and helps you out. But then the end of the game, you have to, face what happened to your old buddy, Fergus.
Mm. Another difference between the two timelines is that instead of getting health upgrades, you'll get armor upgrades, is what I read.
Yes, and there are some... I think it's just which areas are accessible based on that, but mm-hmm. or based on this difference, which is in one timeline, Fergus shows you how to hotwire an access panel, and in the other, Wyatt shows you how to pick a lock, which is basically the same skill, but because all you use either one for is opening doors, but it kind of makes a difference of which areas you can get into in some levels. That's interesting.
Yeah. Another thing that I liked about this game is that the perks system always incentivized you, kind of like we brought this up with Bulletstorm, I know. I really love these first-person shooter games that give you bonuses for completing certain weapon kills or certain tasks. So, like, you even brought it up earlier of the... If you stealth kill the commanders enough times, then you get the perk that you now get to see them on your map, thus making it easier to find them and stealth kill them. Like, I really like stuff like that, and I felt like this game had a pretty decent... way of doing that, and like the amount of them I was still doing or incentivized to do special things by the end of the game.
Yeah,
so I think I really liked that.
Some of them were a little ridiculous and required specific circumstances that I ended up ignoring, but for the most part they were pretty reasonable, and I was still, like you said, nearing the end of the game, I was still kind of favoring hiding behind cover and shooting with the rifle, just because I still had a perk to kill so many people hiding behind cover and shooting with the rifle. And I never felt like it was restrictive. It was just when I had a lot of ways I could approach a particular battle, then I could kind of pop open the perks list and go, oh, I could work on this one. And that was fun. Mm-hmm.
The vampire one is probably not the one that I had to go the most out of my way for, but it was definitely one where I specifically had to go, wait, I have to find a health pack before I get this guy.
That one was, I anticipated that being a problem, but then I ended up getting that during the fight in the hospital, just because there are health packs and Nazis everywhere.
Fair enough.
Another thing that I really liked was we were talking about the characters and how well the characters were fleshed out. And I liked returning to the base repeatedly to kind of talk to them and get a feel for everything, where everything was in the base and how they sort of spent their time between missions, even though it was very obvious that the reason they had you keep returning was because eventually you would have to fight your way around it.
Oh yeah, when I went upstairs and I saw that one gate that was locked with a chain that you can only shoot with the laser cannon.
But you can't actually use the cutter.
Yeah, you can't use the cutter because you're not in combat. And I was like, yeah, we're eventually going to get ambushed and I'm going to have to escape through this.
Yes.
I was like, yeah, I see where this is going.
Oh, also, did you sleep on the bed right next to that bed?
Yes, I did do the Wolfenstein 3D Nightmare.
Yeah, that was fun.
There was no achievement associated with it, from what I can tell, which I was a little surprised
Me
by.
Me too. I was a little disappointed there was no achievement for that or for hitting the bullseye, because also in that top area...
Yes, the throwing knives.
The only place that you can use a weapon is there's a bucket of throwing knives and a target, and so you can pick up a bunch of throwing knives and throw them at the target. And I guess it kind of emphasizes the fact that it's just there to be amusing, but I was a little disappointed that I didn't get an achievement for getting a bullseye.
Mm-hmm. I don't really have anything else to specifically mention as a like.
I guess, more going back to the story, but another thing I had complicated feelings about, but I think overall I liked, was the fact that there you know, there are many, many stories throughout fiction of, like, alternate history where the Nazis won World War II, and a lot of them involve time travel or sometimes, you know, alien technology that is discovered or supernatural technology. I appreciated the, you know, the irony here that in this case, the only way that the Nazis could actually win the war was by stealing technology from this Jewish cabal or secret society or whatever you would call it. They had to steal this secret Jewish science to be able to win while still, you know, going on about being the master race. And that's actually a historical parallel to the fact that they had they denounced Jewish science while also using Albert Einstein's theories in their own nuclear research.
Of course.
So, I still have, well, like on a purely sort of narrative front, it felt a little weird to be like, oh well, these people had, you know, lasers and nuclear power, you know, hundreds or thousands of years ago. They just, you know, never used it for any reason until it was stolen, and that just felt like a weird, conceit. But just as far as that fit into the, you know, explaining how the Nazis could have gotten all of this advanced technology, I did appreciate that aspect.
Hmm. I don't really have too much to add. I would say the lunar base was a lot of fun.
Yes. That, from a purely, this is completely ridiculous and awesome, that was a lot of fun.
It really, that was the only area where I got all of the collectibles. I'll say that much.
Me too. I think they just did a better job of putting them in your path. Although, I did.
Maybe.
There were only a couple places that I went back to find Enigma codes, because it was when I saw that there was, like, one that I was missing, and I just looked it up. One of them, I literally walked over the spot where it was lying on the ground when I played through that the first time. So, I can't really blame the designers for missing that one.
So, I could list that as a dislike. I know when I first started the game up, and you're in the airplane, it asks you to go to the door, something like that. Like, he's asking you these tutorial things of, like, getting you acquainted with the game. And I was having the toughest time figuring out, okay, is this something I can interact with? Okay, wait, where is this door? Like, I can't seem to find anything.
Yeah.
It took a little while to figure out what the key signaling is for this game.
Yeah.
Once I found it, it was pretty,
like,
okay.
Like, that level overall is a really good, cool start to the game, but that specific, like, first 60 seconds where he's telling you to get in the back and find the door is just needlessly confusing and frustrating. It was really weird.
It was basically up until the time when he was saying cut the cables, that it was right about there where I started figuring out really what I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that slight glow or outline or whatever. But
A similar, like, minor complaint is, although it kept annoying me because I kept forgetting that this would happen, and then I kept doing it again. About 90% of the time, if I was hiding behind cover and holding the aim button to look over cover, but I threw a grenade, Blazkowicz would drop behind cover again, throw the grenade that would bounce off in front of his face, and then I'd have to run away. And then very rarely it worked the way I would expect it to, and I don't know why.
Weird. I never actually tried throwing grenades from cover. I was usually running around anytime I was throwing a grenade.
I spent a good portion of the game specifically trying to get the perks for shooting from behind cover.
Sure.
And I also just like, the play style of getting to a safe position and taking people out before they get to me rather than running out into danger.
Shotguns, baby! Those automatic shotguns are amazing.
Yeah, those were pretty great. When I found that I couldn't really use them to get through the super soldiers or mechanical enemies, but anytime there was just a bunch of regular soldiers, those were fantastic.
There was one moment that I thought was just kind of bad design. There's a section when you've basically destroyed a bridge, and you're now like climbing through train sections trying to find a scientist who you're going to steal the identity of. But there are these turrets on top of some of the train cars, and I didn't realize for the longest time that you could actually destroy those turrets. So I would destroy the enemies like from cover, run past the turrets, and then, because just how fast you run is usually faster than the turret will aim at you. But then there was this one section where you had to climb a ladder out to the top of a train car, but then the turret of the car next to it would just shoot you while you're having a cutscene, going, there's the train car I'm looking for. So I died repeatedly, getting shot at by this turret, while I was stuck in a cutscene.
Terrible.
And I was like, thank God there was a checkpoint like before this cutscene where I didn't get stuck. There were several times where I was like, oh my gosh, I just got stuck in this endless loop, didn't I? But thankfully the checkpoint was like either just before that point where I got stuck, or maybe even a little bit earlier than that. But like, I never really got stuck. But that was an annoyance, and then I had to figure out, like, I ran around that car so long looking for, like, maybe there's a door or an off button. Mm-hmm. Eventually I found out that you could fire a rocket at the turret, and that would take it out.
When in doubt, blow it up.
Ooh, I almost forgot just how cool the London Monitor, that was my favorite boss fight.
I actually found that kind of frustrating, so I guess that's a moment for me, just because it took it so many times that once I figured out what it wanted me to do, I would shoot
underneath it.
Shoot at the eye and then try to run underneath it, and it would close before I got there.
Oh. I would shoot the eye, and then it would fire off like a barrage of missiles. And again, just shoot a rocket at the missiles, and then it destroys that entire, like, that entire system, that entire arm.
Mm-hmm.
So it was laser, shoot the eye, take out one of the sides of the missiles, hide in the sewer, take out the other arm after the second eye, and then run underneath it as it's like wandering around confused. And the thing was open for long enough that I was able to take it out. And I was like, damn, I was such a badass, because I remember seeing this monitor, I guess they call it, in that initial siege. And firing one of those like large cannons at it a couple times, trying to take it out that way, and I never did. But I was like, damn, this thing that was like super powerful and like everyone is scared of, and I just single-handedly took it out like it was nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I should have focused more on shooting the missiles. I just noticed that when I shot the eye, the port on the bottom opened for like a second, and I kept trying to get that. Eventually what I did was to just stand directly underneath it as I could and wait for it to try to charge up the laser, even though I was directly underneath it, and then like just shoot it from that angle and then immediately look up and shoot. I made it work, but it seemed like that was what it wanted me to do, but it wasn't letting me do it. It was always like, oh, nope, too slow, try again.
Oh. That's funny that we had a really different experience with that one. But yeah, overall, I really felt like I was constantly a badass in this game. I never really got too stuck. Like, usually it was two or three times, and then I would figure out what I was missing and then be able to move forward. And then feel like a badass again. And yeah, overall, I rather enjoyed this game. And I'll probably pick up the new Colossus sometime when it's like $20 or less. Maybe.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it too. Although, as we both talked about, there's kind of a weird mixed feeling about the themes and how dark it went in different ways. But
I hear the new Colossus is even darker.
Yeah.
Like, in this game, like, you brought up the whole torture scene, and then it actually, like, cuts away right before it gets graphic.
Yeah.
The way I've heard people talk about the new Colossus is that they don't cut away anymore.
Yeah, I know. I avoided reading a lot of articles, like, specifically talking about it, but I saw, or you know, lists, like we mentioned in the last episode, Waypoint did a spoiler cast that I believe started being about the New Order, but in their second half, they started talking about New Colossus. But I did see they published an article on Waypoint that was like, you know, there's a certain point where you already know the villain is evil. You don't have to go that extra mile. So, I guess...
This game, they obviously felt like they did.
I guess we can look forward to that.
Yes. Eventually. Probably sometime, maybe someday in 3 years when... I've heard it's a trilogy, but it's unclear if the Old Blood is counted in that trilogy name or if there's really a Wolfenstein 3 coming. I don't know. Like, everyone was saying it's a trilogy of games, but no one was specifically clear that there's another game in 3 years that is planned or not.
Interesting. Yeah, I decided to skip the Old Blood because I heard it had good combat, but didn't really add anything to the story. So I would be surprised if that was counted as a trilogy, like part of the trilogy. But I also had not heard about the trilogy before I noticed that you mentioned it in the notes for this episode, so I don't know.
I saw it on the wiki, so it must be true, right?
Yes, that's how that works.
Did you give your thoughts, or did I miss that? You may have just, like, added on to mine.
Yeah, I just added it on to yours. That was pretty much how I felt as well.
Okay, yeah. I think that's it. What's our game for next month, David?
System Shock 2. Speaking
of... A classic.
Granddaddies of genres. I guess System Shock Original was really the... but this is still one of the very first, you know, of the immersive sim, sneaking around with a bunch of, you know, AI and different systems to manipulate while someone keeps mocking you over the loudspeakers. So we can look forward to that.
Yes, System Shock 2. Was this one by Ken Levine? Or was he just BioShock?
I feel like it was the same team, but I don't remember for sure.
I know that everyone called BioShock a spiritual successor to the System Shock series.
Yeah, it was Ken Levine and Irrational Games.
So yeah, definitely a classic in the whole... Like, BioShock, I think a lot of people have played, and System Shock 2 is... I have heard many good things, so I'm excited to check that out. Our episode for that should be out in March 24th, but I am expecting my first child any day now.
Woo.
So who knows what my schedule for next month is going to look like. and that is also only a PC game, so that'll be fun. But yeah, so System Shock 2 for March. As we wrap up, I would like to take a moment and thank Carbohydran and Funk Fiction for letting us use their songs for our intro and outros respectively. Their work is great, and you can check out more by following the links in the description. And with that, we shall leave you by saying, game on.